Hello there, welcome again to Seven Laws Blog UK. I'm David, otherwise known as Hesediah, and today's post will be called Close to the Jew, Far from the Gentile, Part 2. It's theirs, not yours. Again, it's called Close to the Jew, Far from the Gentile, Part 2. It's theirs, not yours. It was not the first time that I'd heard the argument, but hearing it from one who I truly admire was jarring. It was a jarring sensation. It was a claim that to study or keep the seven laws that were enjoined upon Adam and Noah, apart from Jewish Torah tutelage, was akin to theft. It was among other claims that perturbed me, and they can be found on a blog called emunatrek.wordpress.com. That's Emuna, E-M-U-N-A, Trek, like Star Trek, T-R-E-K, .wordpress.com. Emunatrek.wordpress.com. And it was an article called, I think it's The Seven Are Not 1-2-3, or The Seven Laws Are Not 1-2-3. And it was in that article that I found those claims that disturbed me so much, amongst other thoughts that he shared. You can check out the article when you get the chance. I suggest you take a look. Make sure I'm not going to take him out of context. But I made a choice some time ago when approached by a kind Jew, a good man, to attach myself to one rabbi. I said no. I couldn't do it. I disagreed too much with the statements of that rabbi, based on what others had said that made a lot more sense than he did to me. I think that could have been one of the most significant decisions I've made that led me here, more adrift than ever from any seven laws cognizant Gentile. But I don't think I would choose any differently if I were given that choice again. The few other Torah observant Gentiles I know with whom I've had some closeness hold views taught by their rabbis or Jewish teachers that repulse me deeply. The author of that blog is one of them. Now that doesn't mean he's one of those Torah observant Gentiles. But that doesn't mean I reject him as a friend. Only that we do what most people do. We just disagree. Let me go through some of the claims he makes and ponder on them here. So claim number one, the seven laws were placed under Israel's jurisdiction. Once the seven were given at Sinai, they became under Israel's rule. To expand, in another article he says, that friend of mine, he says, the Tanakh, or the Jewish Bible, is a conversation that the Creator is having with Israel. Even the parts that include the seven laws, they were all part of the Sinai package to Israel. According to Jewish tradition, it was offered to the world, but the world's majority turned it down, and Israel was the only nation to accept it. That includes the seven Noahide laws. Claim number two. Those who view the seven laws in a secular way, wanting to interpret those laws for themselves, do something akin to theft, no different to what the Romans, or possibly the Christians, did to the Ten Commandments, i.e. they just stole it, took it for themselves and treated it like it was their own. Gentiles are not to learn about God on our own, or else we'll turn evil, like the people during the time of the Great Flood, or the people of Sodom and Nineveh. So those are the three claims. Now let me, as a Gentile, a non-Jew, absorb the implications of this stance. It was taught by a great con man, Paul of Tarsus, that Gentiles were alienated from the commonwealth of Israel and foreigners to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. That's Quint Ephesians in the Christian Bible, Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12. It seems that according to my friend, and most likely those teaching him, Paul wasn't far off the mark. According to Bava Kamma 38a and Avodah Zarah 2b in the Babylonian Talmud, one of the rabbis' exposition of Habakkuk 3 verse 6 was to say that at some unknown time in history, God saw that the descendants of Noah didn't keep the seven laws. So he arose and what did they say God did? Well, Sonsino's edition of the Talmud, the translation, that translation says he granted them exemption. That's according to Bava Kamma 38a. Or, according to Avodah Zarah 2b, it says he released them therefrom. The William Davidson translation or edition says he permitted their prohibitions to them, according to Bava Kamma 38a, or he nullified them. He nullified for them the command to heed those seven commandments. That's their translation of Avodah Zarah 2b. Both sections explain that what is meant is that Gentiles receive a lesser reward for keeping the commandments. But did you spot that? Did you spot that? Because I did. I just spotted it. It says that the descendants of Noah didn't keep the seven laws. Not the nations, not the idolaters, but the descendants of Noah. And it was the descendants of Noah who were released from the seven. Doesn't that fly against the idea that there is some distinction between righteous Gentiles who are called descendants of Noah and unrighteous ones who are just bog standard Gentiles? Anyway, back to subject. Anyway, what does this mean? For my friend, this means that now, or this means that it is now only for the Jews to not only teach us the seven laws, which makes sense, but also to interpret it for us authoritatively. I'm not going to go against that for now. Just focus on the implications I see. This means that all nations will be dependent states with limited autonomy, being beholden to Israel, quote unquote Israel, whatever that means. They must not only be taught about the seven laws, but those laws must also be interpreted for them. And these are the laws that must be incorporated by all nations, Israel having the highest authority. I wonder if you can see how that looks, how it looks to the actual nationalist, Gentile nationalist, the person zealous for his people group, and how it looks to the anti-Semite and the potential anti-Semite. All of a sudden, there is real truth to the notion of Israel and the rabbis ruling the world. I recently got done in writing my disagreement with the Divine Code's claim that everyone is essentially a slave to the territorially accepted mafia called government. The author of that book was expounding on the law of theft, one of the seven laws. Based on my friend's stance, there's no point in complaining about where this apparent interpretation comes from. My friend's conclusion can only mean that my writing is to no avail. It's Israel's, whatever Israel means, it's Israel's authority to interpret our, no, actually, I mean what is essentially their law for us. Hence, the Divine Code says we're slaves to the dominator claiming ownership. So slaves we are, and that's all there is to it, because they can authoritatively declare to us what the seven laws mean. So also look at who my friend said would be interpreting authoritatively the seven laws, something called Israel. You can see that I keep using reserved language whenever I refer to Israel. Why? Because I don't know who exactly he's referring to. I did ask him who Israel specifically referred to, whether it was any genetic Jew, any rabbi, any modern rabbi, any ancient rabbi, the ones who were part of the now non-existent but soon to be reconstituted Sanhedrin. Who exactly are the ones calling the shots for us? He didn't know either. You see, I'm not a collectivist. I don't take a name referring to a group, have that name do an action, and then accept that groups can act in reality. No, individuals act. And there are many different Jews and rabbis with different teachings. Some good, some not so good. Some educated, some not so educated. Some possibly right and some possibly wrong. This is especially true in this day and age, where a person can have the title Jew and rabbi, and with that assumed authority, interpret the seven laws. Is that Israel? Didn't a set of four or five rabbis recently condemn the teaching of two rabbis, Katz and Klorfein? Weren't Katz and Klorfein Jews? Weren't they rabbis? How would a Gentile know who's the right Israel to listen to? Should I follow a Baron or a Weiner or Wiener, whatever his name is? Maybe I should follow the rabbis at Yeshiva Perhei Shoshanim. Maybe I should pick some other rabbi, like Rabbi Asher Mazer. You see, vague statements such as this Israel is not much help or guidance. Then it is said that someone interpreting the seven laws without Israel, in a secular sense, is akin to a thief. Let me be blunt about the inevitable implication of this statement. Theft means you're taking something that belongs to someone else without their consent. This means that the seven laws do not belong to the Gentiles, but to Israel. When Rambam teaches that a Gentile should either become a Jew if he wants more commandments, or keep his own Torah, the seven laws, that's in the Mishnah Torah, Laws of Kings 10 verse 9, when Rabbi Meir speaks of it being robbery for an idolater to study the Jewish Torah, that is like sleeping with someone else's wife, but that idolater, that Gentile, studying his own seven laws makes him like a high priest, which is in Sanhedrin 59a, the more modern rabbis flip the words on their heads. You see, to them, it doesn't matter if it's the seven laws or the 613, it's all the Jews. And it's theft to treat any of it like it's meant for Gentiles to interpret for themselves. Again, remember the word of God, comforting words to the nation of Israel in Deuteronomy 30, verse 14, that says, "My word is near you, so that you may keep it," or "so that you may do it." The message is the opposite for a Gentile without a Jew. Keeping God's law is out of your reach. So this life is all you have for yourself, unless you know a Jew. Paul's message rings in the words of the Jewish teachers. You are Gentiles with limited or no promise, no hope, alienated from the covenants because God sealed it from you with Israel. And it gets worse. If I were doing mini titles or subheadings, I'd call this next section, Salvation is of the Jews, Depravity of the Gentiles. Why? Because not only is our only hope for salvation with the Jews, But if we try to learn about God on our own and include interpreting the seven laws in that, we Gentiles are bound to get it wrong and end up destruction bound, like the doomed and evil generation of the deluge, like the exceedingly wicked Sodom, like the ill-fated Nineveh. Without Israel, we will do it wrong. It's almost like we're no longer in the image of God anymore. No hope for finding his path for us, like Abraham did. Wow, he must have been so unique, so unique. No, even if it were the case that Israel's only task was to hand us what God told them to hold for us, and then let us have what was originally ours, then we'd still mess it up because Gentiles are doomed to sin and born to die. Look, I may get fed up by people and their disappointing tendencies. I include both Jew and Gentile and myself in that disappointment. But I'm not into this doctrine of total depravity for Gentiles, where the only good ones happen to be close enough to a rabbi to convert them from being a bog-standard Gentile to becoming Noahide. So the only good Gentile is the rabbinically governed one. For me, more and more from the Gentiles that are more closely linked to rabbis, I'm hearing the sort of teaching that makes the concept of righteous among the nations hollow. It's sometimes taught in the sense that in various parts of the world, it's sometimes taught in some sense that in various parts of the world, there are non-Jews who manage to use their God-given faculties to actually sort through the trash of their own cultures to become good people, avoiding the acts prohibited in the seven laws. Maybe without knowing the formulation of the seven, maybe going beyond the seven to be kind and upright individuals. But the Gentiles fashioned by rabbis are coming out with notions that would even exclude those good Gentiles because they may not know of or bow to the God of Israel. It's not the righteous of the nations, but the Gentile products and subjects of the Jews. Is that what it was always meant to be? No. Let me catch myself. Having read enough Jewish books, I should know that this is one teaching amongst others. I don't have to paint the whole thing in the colour of what I've been hearing. Let me state one thing. Well, I've stated a lot already, but anyway. The idea that what went wrong with the people of Sodom and Nineveh, even the generation of the flood, was that they had the seven laws and tried to interpret it for themselves, resulting in the evil that made them worthy of devastation. Or that they all tried to learn about God on their own without Israel. That's an argument without evidence. To clarify, the argument is, or at least the argument was phrased in the way that what got the people of Sodom and Nineveh into trouble was that they tried to learn about God on their own. That's what turned them evil. Or they had the seven laws, they didn't rely on the Jews, even though for some of them there were no Jews, but they tried to work it out on their own, and that led them to destruction. And that is an argument without evidence. It seems that there is so much negative sentiment about Gentiles, us being prone to evil, and I guess it would be wrong to, shine the spotlight back on the Jews, who are meant to be our great example, huh? Look, I'm just disappointed. I'm disappointed, that's what it is. Actually, while I'm at it, let me just make something clear. I've referred to Paul, the con man, a number of times in this article. He's a figure in the Christian religion. I do not bring him up because I think my friend is still living with Paul's doctrines. I strongly believe that my friend has forsaken them a long time ago. It is only that the sort of teachings that he's sharing reminds me of what Paul taught. I mean, I wrote a whole book on that guy, on Paul. What was it called now? The Bitter Root. It's on Amazon. The Apostle Paul, Saul of Tarsus, The Bitter Root. It's on Amazon and Smashwords and that. But I wrote a whole book about the guy. And I used to be a Christian. And I've got a good memory with the verses that I studied. So I'm bound to remember some of the things that he said. Anyway, let me tackle some of what's been put forward. So my friend said that God offered the nations of the world the Torah, but they refused. And only Israel accepted it. And that this includes the Seven Commandments. That claim is incorrect. The account is recorded in Avodah Zarah 2b, but it isn't a historical or literal event. It can't be, since it talks of Romans and Persians. Anyway, in this passage, it is said that God went round to each nation offering them something called the Torah, and they rejected it. Did this Torah include the seven laws? Well, it doesn't, because later in the passage, the seven laws are brought up as something separate to Torah, that the Gentiles, the descendants of Noah, had accepted previously, but hadn't kept. It should also be added that this Torah was the one given at Sinai, something that would set Israel apart from the nations, making them special. Seeing that the 613 laws, that clearly this Torah is, seeing that the 613 laws that clearly this Torah is not simply the seven laws. There is no actual evidence that God took away the seven laws from the descendants of Noah, which in the Talmud refers normally to all non-Jews, and then gave it to Israel, making it their sole possession, the taking of which would be theft. Actually, think about it. Avodah Zarah says that this Torah was only accepted by the Jews. This was their possession, their inheritance. Yet in Sanhedrin 59a, it is that Torah, those 613 laws, into which a Gentile should not delve, since that would be similar to theft and adultery. And according to Sanhedrin 59a, into what can an idolater, a Gentile, delve into without fear of the accusation of theft? The seven laws. It appears that the seven laws are not the possession of the Jews to such an extent that it is theft for us to use it or to take it. A point by my friend is made which I fully agree with. If a person wants to know the refined details of the seven, then it is very important to find the right rabbi, not simply any Jew. But we Gentiles are at a weakness of not knowing who's the right rabbi, with the differences of views flying around. So it's important to study what texts we can for ourselves. But it is possible for a person to be good without a Jew, to avoid the prohibited acts without even knowing the codification of the seven laws. The rabbi following Gentile is not the elect, the true children of Noah, the ones who are saved, while all others, the non-Noahide Gentiles in the world, are lost. Come on, is it really the case that the choices for being acceptable to God is either to be Jewish or Jew-connected? Again, is it really the case that the choices for being acceptable to God are either to be Jewish or Jew-connected? Just as an aside, it has been taught that the texts I refer to, Avodah Zarah 2b and Bava Kamma 38a, show that Gentiles, on a whole, no longer have an obligation to keep the seven laws. For them, it's been abrogated or nullified, and the ones who get accepted by Jews now have the obligations back. For me personally, and the teachers I've listened to, such is not the case. All Gentiles are obligated. All Gentiles. Let me quote Rabbi Broid on the topic. And here's a quote. Before one can explore the obligation upon Jews to enforce Noahide laws, it is necessary to determine if Jewish law accepts that these commandments are still binding on Noahides. And let me just say here, by Noahides he just means non-Jews, in general, Gentiles. The Talmud recounts as one possible resolution of an unrelated torch law problem that God observed the Gentiles of the land. What did he see? He saw that the seven laws, or the seven commandments he gave to the Noahides, were not observed, and thus he permitted these seven commandments to them. Based on this assertion, Bach, Rabbi Chaim Abulafia, Penai Yehoshua, Maharit, and perhaps Chatam Sofer, and a version of Tosafot, all indicate that Gentiles are no longer legally obligated even to keep the Noahide commandments, and those who do keep them would be in the status of one not obligated and observing. This can perhaps be inferred from the comments of Rashi as well. As noted by Penai Yehoshua, if these commandments are no longer binding on Noahides, the problem associated with assisting a violation or not encouraging observance would greatly decrease. And indeed, Penai Yehoshua rules that the only thing that would still be prohibited would be actually enticing them to do something that Noahides cannot do without the assistance of a Jew. Most authorities reject this insight and accept that the Noahide laws or commandments are still fully binding. They argue that it is difficult to accept that all of the Talmudic discussions concerning Noahide laws are predicated on the unstated assumption of the abrogation of the Noahide obligation, or even the abrogation of the biblical obligation. Indeed, this position appears to be rejected by every single one of the early authorities, the Rishonim, who codified the Noahide laws, and the numerous later authorities, Achronim, who did so. Thus, it is safe to state that Jewish law treats the Noahide laws as binding. Indeed, there are numerous discussions within the Shulchan Aruch and its commentaries which simply assume that the Noahide laws are fully binding. And that quote can be found in an article called The Obligation of Jews to Seek Observance of Noahide Laws by Gentiles, a theoretical review by Rabbi Michael J. Broid. That can be found at jlaw.com. So that's the end of the quote. And once again, let me make it clear for you that Rabbi Broid is using Noahide in the sense prevalent in most of the ancient Jewish resources I've read. Namely, a Noahide is only and simply a non-Jew. That's it. You can see that in the first footnote of his work. Again, my friend is correct to say the seven laws are in Jewish tradition. The whole Jewish Bible, the written and oral tradition, all of it is in their language. It is in God's revelation to them. But does that mean that righteousness, the quality of living according to a good standard, is locked away with the Jew as well? I put it to you that if there was a righteous person before the giving of the Torah to Israel, then there can be righteous people without the Torah. And by Torah, I'm still referring to the 613 commandments that are for Jews. And it's not because I believe in something called natural law, as I've been accused of before, but rather because I believe that God's standard, his commands, for a Gentile to act right, are objective moral standards which a Gentile accords with by not doing those prohibited acts whether he knows the source or not. Let's look at the word secular. According to a dictionary, it has two meanings that seem relevant to this discussion. It means worldly as opposed to spiritual, and not relating to religion, non-religious. According to my friend, a Gentile who views the seven laws in a secular way, wanting to interpret the laws for themselves, is no different than what the Romans did to the Ten Commandments, and it can be seen as theft, according to him. Here are the problems with this reasoning. According to the dictionary definition, viewing the seven laws in a secular way means to view them in a worldly way as opposed to a spiritual way or in a non-religious way. Religious means relating to religion, a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe, especially when considered as the creation of a supernatural agency or agencies, usually involving devotional and ritual observances and often containing a moral code for the conduct of human affairs. So non-religious means not relating to or concerning such beliefs. The seven laws themselves command no belief in God and can be kept without such a belief. How? The core seven laws are all prohibitions concerning actions you are not to do. A Gentile is objectively obligated to keep the commands according to Sanhedrin 56a, which says, seven commandments were enjoined upon the descendants of Noah, which means humanity, now the non-Jewish people of the world. If a Gentile avoids what is prohibited, then he's counted as law-abiding. And just an aside, someone put it to me that in the same way Jews had to accept their covenant at Sinai, the individual Gentile has to accept the Noahic covenant. This understanding is linked to the erroneous idea that God released the Gentiles from the obligation of the original covenant, a point of view refuted by Rabbi Broid above. There is no compelling link between the nation of Israel accepting their covenant at Sinai and an individual Gentile keeping laws he was already obligated to keep originally through Adam, only reiterated to Noah. Anyway, as there is no command for a Gentile to accept God's existence, according to the Talmud, and even according to the wording of the Mishneh Torah, then the seven laws are non-religious, they're secular. It's very easy to prove, based on Jewish tradition, that there is no command upon Gentiles to believe God exists. The question for me is whether I should use quotes or references. I guess I'm just going to use quotes. All the seven laws, save the law of justice, are prohibitions only, commands to refrain from action. And to quote Talmud Sanhedrin 58b, it says, only negative injunctions are enumerated in the seven laws, not positive ones. And footnote 38 from the Sonsino edition on this statement says, the seven Noahian laws deal with things which an heathen, or a Gentile, must abstain from doing. There are two facts here. A, believing in God's existence is a positive and active thing, thus something that is not part of the seven laws. And B, the commentary refers to doing, an action. So the commandments cover actions, not beliefs. And since accepting God's existence is not an action, but a belief, it's not covered by the seven commandments. Next is the fact that the Talmud, Ramban, that ends with an N, and Rambam, ending with an M, teach that breaking the seven brings the death penalty. So Sanhedrin 57a says, their prohibition is their death sentence. Footnote 29 of the Sonsino edition says, namely, they're commenting on that statement, their prohibition is their death sentence. Namely, in speaking of Gentiles or heathens, when the Tanna teaches that they are forbidden to do something, he ipso facto teaches that it is punishable by death. End quote. Now, Rambam in Mishneh Torah, Laws of Kings and Wars, 9, Law 14, says, a Gentile who transgresses these seven commandments shall be executed by decapitation. Now, and also Ramban teaches this, saying, however, if they do not do this, namely setting up courts and judges, they, Gentiles, children of Noah, are not put to death, because this is a positive commandment for them. And the sages said only that admonition not to do a particular act is what leads to their death. Namely, the Torah's warning that something is forbidden is sufficient to warrant the death penalty for Noahide laws. Again, that's commenting on Sanhedrin 57a. And that's from page 225, the Torah, with Ramban's commentary translated, annotated, and elucidated by Rabbi Yaakov Blinder, where Ramban comments on Genesis chapter 34, verse 13. So, whatever law is part of the seven laws, if a person should break it, then it is a capital offense. Not believing in God's existence is not a capital offense. And just in case you don't want to take my Gentile word for it, let me quote a rabbi. Now, this is what Rabbi Michael Shlomo Bar-Ron says in his book, Guide for the Noahide, in a chapter called Introduction to Part 3. He says as follows. For example, in the freedom of thought afforded by the Noahide laws, there is no outright penal obligation in this world for believing there is a God. Again, there is no outright penal obligation to believe that there is a God. Therefore, while an atheist forfeits his portion in the world to come, if he wishes to live a quiet life among Noahides, so long as he doesn't curse God or commit idolatry, he could be an upstanding citizen in principle. End quote. Or what about another resource, like the Jewish Virtual Library, in their article called "The Jewish Concepts: The Seven Noahide Laws"? This is what they say: the prohibition of idolatry provides that the non-Jew does not have to know God, but must disregard false gods. End quote. So I'm not some lone Gentile pushing my ideas onto Jewish tradition. All this is to show that my friend condemns the approach of those who see the seven laws in a secular way, a non-religious way, a worldly way, with belief in God not being a mandated prerequisite for keeping the seven. The seven laws, therefore, are non-religious, worldly in effect. Remember, religious means concerning a certain set of beliefs. It can even mean having or showing belief in or reverence for a deity or power. The laws are about actions, not beliefs. Right. All about actions, not beliefs.
At this point, someone is bound to drop in Rambam's Mishneh Torah, Laws of Kings, 8, Law 11, and say, but didn't Maimonides say that observance plus belief that God commanded the seven laws in the Torah gives a Gentile place in the world to come? Well, yes, he did. Rambam did say that. But this was not written as the prerequisite for keeping the laws, that this was the only way the laws would be kept, which so many so-called Noahides seem to believe. The very same section in Mishneh Torah has Maimonides saying this, however, if he, fulfills the seven laws out of intellectual conviction, end quote. And this clearly shows that the seven laws can be kept just because they agree with a person's inclination or reasoning. Man, I'm going to have to write an article about why this is not so crazy as is made out. Why the argument that such people aren't really keeping the commandments... Oh wait, I think I have done the latter one already. Anyway, I don't want to link myself to such religious elitist thinking. The argument is sometimes given that the seven laws are religious because their source is God. This reasoning makes no sense. Why? Because everything was created or given by God, including the world, including the worldly things, i.e. the secular things. So just because the source of something is God, that doesn't automatically make it religious. Anyway, the fact is that the notion that the seven laws are religious or must be understood in a religious or spiritual way lacks merit. Does it make any difference that there is no Hebrew word equivalent to religion in the Torah texts? Or that God is not put forward as a position of belief or like a religion in the Jewish Bible, but rather of knowledge and truth? It may be that in a way more essential than I ever thought, the seven laws are not religious. But then it could be said that the word secular isn't in the Torah text either. Interesting. Maybe I'm getting focused on the wrong thing. But, as I'm an English dude, using my language, and therefore my concepts, since belief in God is not part of the seven laws, or not one of the seven laws, and the laws are not beliefs, then the seven laws aren't religious and can be seen as secular, especially since they're supposed to be the ultimate law of nations in a with worldly or secular punishments. Now, should we Gentiles interpret the law for ourselves? I've already conceded that refined understanding of the details of the laws should come from the Jews. But what exactly is happening when that's done? So when a Jew interprets the laws, what are they doing? See, my friend said that the unknown Israel must interpret the laws. What does that mean? To interpret. Again, he used an English word, so I'll again use an English dictionary. To interpret means to explain or clarify the meaning of something. It makes sense that those entrusted with the seven laws should explain them to Gentiles, at least at first anyway. I can't argue with that. Who would? But, did you see that coming, the but? Yes, but. Yeah, and as I said, but, this is where we Gentiles are at a loss and a very serious disadvantage. Why? Let's compare the seven laws as written down by Rambam, or even as discussed in the Talmud, with works like the Divine Code, or even the Path of the Righteous Gentile, and similar works out there by rabbis. Remember, the seven laws are supposed to be those prohibitions that bring the liability of death according to Rambam, Ramban, and the Talmud. So it would make sense that a rabbi explain to me what the law of idolatry is, or the law of murder, or the law of theft. But when the rabbi starts talking about things that don't involve the seven core commandments, he is no longer explaining the seven laws. If a rabbi teaches, it is forbidden to arrange a discussion or a debate with one who prophesies in the name of idols, according to page 59 of the Divine Code, then he's not explaining the law of idolatry.
If a rabbi teaches hunting merely for the sake of sport is not permitted because of the pain causing the animal, according to page 350 of the Divine Code, then he is not explaining the prohibition against eating meat taken from an animal while it's alive. If a rabbi teaches, it is forbidden for a person who was wronged to be cruel and not let himself be appeased, according to page 26 of the same book, then he's not explaining the seven laws at all. But we are in a loss, or at a loss, in the way that many are conditioned to simply accept authority, and a rabbi is seen as being in a position of authority. This person, the rabbi, is then declaring things forbidden, which are not part of the seven. So he's supposed to be part of the Israel that gets to authoritatively interpret or explain our laws, yet now he's authoritatively dictating all Gentile morality. I don't think many people are going to see a problem with that, but I do. Maybe a study of Milgram's psychology experiment into the power of authority is applicable here. In addition, think about this with me. So Israel has the seven laws to authoritatively explain and clarify it to Gentiles. Okay, that's fine. But now a Gentile spends time learning the seven laws, studying them, understanding them. Now, can't this Gentile explain or interpret the seven? Even authoritatively? What stops him? Doesn't his very knowledge give him the authority? Of course, I'm using authority in the sense of expertise, since in no way do Jews have authority, meaning the right to rule, over Gentiles, even in terms of our laws. Some imagined a declaration from God saying to the non-Jew, actually, no, you can't explain it, only and simply because you're not Israel. The Jew learns the seven laws as a bystander, not actually part of the Gentile world that must apply the laws. And maybe he learns it to a lesser extent than a studied Gentile who actually lives and applies the laws. But in the world of you presented by my friend, the Jew can explain it authoritatively, but the studied Gentile cannot. Does that make sense? It's like certain rabbis, not all, but certain of them, enjoy holding and maintaining a monopoly on teaching Torah. Enjoy having Jews maintain that monopoly. Even though their early sages distinguished between Torah, received at Sinai, and the seven laws for Gentiles, these rabbis wish to expand that monopoly onto the seven laws and stake a claim on our divine laws when they teach that no matter how educated a Gentile is, only the rabbis rule, only the Jews rule. But remember, according to my friend, Gentiles are doomed to get it all wrong. So maybe we just need our hand held in everything. If someone like Alan Cecil saw this sort of teaching, he probably already has, he'd make some accusation against such rabbis believing their souls to be of superior nature to us inferior Gentiles, such that only they can transmit our seven laws. It's not difficult to come to such conclusions. Actually, I just read an old article of his, which is almost a rebuttal to my friend's stance, even before he wrote it. And it can be found at academyofshem.wordpress.com, and it's an article called Rabbinics. So that was academyofshem.wordpress.com. And the article is called Rabbinics. But don't show this sort of thinking to an anti-Semite, a nationalist, in fact to any person who has a better view of humanity than this. Also, I have my doubts about how much is really in the seven laws for the rabbis to authoritatively explain. I'll go back to my preferred subject, government. So some rabbis have explained that the Gentile law of theft has God commanding man that man, he is owned by whatever government gets enough people to accept its rule. Let me just remind you, or myself, of how Rambam described the seven laws that Gentiles are obligated to keep. He said, this only applies when he accepts them, the seven laws, and fulfills them because the Holy One, blessed be he, commanded them in the Torah and informed us through Moses, our teacher, that Noah's descendants have been commanded to fulfill them previously. Again, that Noah's descendants had been commanded to fulfill them previously, and that's in Mishnah Torah, Laws of King 8, Law 11. Now, so Noah and possibly Adam had previously been commanded to fulfill these laws. So that would mean, if, as Rambam said, the Noah's descendants had been commanded to fulfill them previously, that would mean that God commanded Adam, who first got the law of theft, that according to divine code, there would be something called a king, and that he would own everyone and everything in a certain territory, including the people, therefore implying that the vast majority of his descendants would be slaves, owned and coerced by others. It's possible, of course, just hard to imagine. Or maybe Noah, who was given his covenant before the coming of the first kingdom of Babel. Maybe he was taught this detail. Or maybe this was one of those modifications that God attached to the seven laws at the time of Moses, that most Gentiles are slaves. But was this tradition handed down, or was it another derivation of the rabbis using their esoteric methods of law derivation? Who knows? Again, I have my doubts. But I guess I'm only a Gentile outside of the circle of these esoteric teachings only meant for Jews. It seems, according to more of those calling themselves Noahides, it's just my lot to shut up and take what I'm given, lest I refuse and be lost. I'm skeptical. I'm alone, adrift, and skeptical. And if I continue typing, I don't know when I'll stop, so I'll stop. My friend has shown himself to be one of the most honourable men I know. I am without doubt that his heart is Godward, towards God. But his article is a sign of a trend I see that warns me even more against attaching myself to any rabbi. His article shows me a perceived great distance between a Gentile and the laws the tradition says is his. His message shows me that in this worldview, most Gentiles historically and presently are doomed not because of what they do, but because of what they don't know or what they don't believe. That's my conclusion, and maybe I'm wrong, just maybe. And that's it. That's the end of that article. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you have a great day.